Okay, hello friends. Here we are at Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 143A. Page 596. Excuse me. Been talking quite a bit today here. DK summarizes this process of receiving the will. And I've wondered whether it can be related to five stages which can be placed on the Dorje on page 610, transmission, reception, absorption, relation, and living activity. And this I have discussed in the last part of the last program. But it all boils down to the idea that you have tremendous mysteries here. The method of invoking the will is one of invocation and evocation, the method of accessing the will, and there is one of the most important clues to the evolutionary process through invocation and responsive evocation. If we look at it, we realize that on the moon chain and in an earlier system, animal man aspired. There was no intervention of the solar angels, and so it was that there was an evocation of the highest aspect of his nature. And a causal body was formed, and the union of spirit and matter proceeded. There's the key to the mystery of time and space that is mystifying. I've thought much about the mystery of time and space, but very little concerning this Dorje diagram. The Dorje diagram is this one, or let's say this one. And we have reviewed some of the possible modes of transmission here involving greater sources than simply one star of the Great Bear. And the key, the solution to all problems, and I discuss that in terms of the ring pass knot in which we live, and how the problems of that ring pass knot may indeed be addressed by understanding the energies that are available to the ring pass knot and what sources they come from and how they reach the point of focus on which we are living and where our problems are found. But as DK tells us, the factor which is of major importance is that the whole matter is an expression of the will, and that's precisely what this section of the book is dealing with. In considering this process, I would have you study tabulation of 10, for it is a symbolic form embodying what I seek to convey. And we have been doing that quite a bit, have we not? Let's see. I think so. Maybe I have to go up and excise number 10 once again. There it is. There it is. All right, tabulation 10. I'll bring it down to the place where we are currently working. Okay. Right. I would have you study tabulation 10. So let's do that. We'll put it right there. For it is a symbolic form embodying what I seek to convey. And what I've done with tabulation 10 is I've talked about some different ways of viewing this tabulation, different ways of understanding it, with greater sources conveying the rays than simply one star of the Great Bear, which, as I say, until I'm corrected, it kind of offends my sense of proportion. Whenever I see a diagram in which the tail is wagging the dog, in which a lesser power is somehow controlling a greater power, I worry about it a bit, and I try to find another solution. I would point out, he says, that the will aspect, as it is embodied in the rays and transmitted by the constellations, works out destructively when concentrated through an orthodox planet and constructively when concentrated through an exoteric planet. I guess the Orthodox planets tend to feed the elemental nature which rebels against the inner soul directive. So this is an interesting idea. All the rays, we're told that the rays on the lower turn of the spiral, they hate and kill each other, you know, and we see the antagonism of the ray types until they really understand each other, which takes yet a while. You think about Christianity's attack upon the Ray 5 group and the Ray 7 group simultaneously. And there's even attacks by the sixth ray upon the second ray group. But when greater understanding arises about the place which each one of them is to play in the scheme of things, then there will be cooperation rather than this instinctive antagonism. So this is something to consider. The ray energies, as transmitted by the constellations, work out destructively when concentrated through an orthodox planet, and constructively when concentrated through an esoteric planet. The soul is the builder. The soul is constructive. The personality under Mars is often destructive. All right. Here you have the secret guide to the significance of death and immortality. Very big, very deep issues here. This is something which the average astrologer will be unable to prove because the cycles involved are too long. And we have not studied these yet. We've really been studying astrology scientifically. Well, have we ever? It's only in our day and age, just a few hundred years. Maybe in the ancient Chaldean times there was much more science and much longer periods in which to arrive at astrological judgments. Intuitively, he can, however, grasp the probability of my proposition. Now, does this mean that death is associated with the destructive forces and immortality and the sustainment of harmony in the vehicle with the constructive forces? We are reminded exactly, is it of law number, is it law number 6 in esoteric healing? Let's check this out. Under the behest, B-E-H-E-S-T. Well, I'm just going to look up B-E-H-E-S-T, and let's see how we do. All right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Here it is. At the behest. That's why I failed to get it. When the building energies of the soul are active in the body, then there is health, clean interplay, and right activity. When the builders are the lunar lords and those who work under the control of the moon and at the behest of the lower personal self, then you have disease, ill health, and death. I think we can certainly correlate this statement with what is just being said with the ray and constellational energies coming through the non-sacred planets, giving us destruction, ill health, disease, and death, and the disintegration of the form, and possibly immortality when there is a constantly constructive force. One may have wondered how some of the masters can choose a conscious immortality in a vehicle if they deem it wise to do so. So we will be unable to prove, he says, but may I remind you that our theme is the divine plan, purpose, and will. In this juncture, let's see, at this point, it is not the evolution of consciousness or the second aspect of divinity. Divine plan, purpose, and will, it's along the first right line. That's the line along which, at this time, we are studying. We are attempting to, in some measure, to formulate the life of the Father, the will of the monad, and the purpose of the Spirit. All of these are equivalent terms in a way, especially when capitalized, Father, Monad, and Spirit. We are trying to formulate the life, of the Father aspect, the will of the monad, and the purpose of the Spirit. Father, monad, and Spirit are so close to the essence of being that the will tends sometimes to be conflated with the idea of being, since it is the first expression of being. In all these, the three aspects of the will, that is, lies germinating the seed of the next solar system. It will be a first-ray solar system, which will mean that although the soul ray of our solar logos will remain the second ray necessarily, its personality ray will probably be the first. I suspect that's how it will happen. The seed of the next solar system, the third, and the fruition of the personality manifestation of the logos. Well, the fruition of the personality manifestation, it's now a second-ray personality, that can come to fruition under the will to fulfillment. But anyway, we're speaking of that subtle quality which will be responsible for the type of life lived in the next solar system. Of course, this is trillions of years ahead, according to the Brahmanic chronology. We need, therefore, to formulate the interpretation of the seven rays in terms of the will and not of love or consciousness. And this we will now attempt to do, so it will be abstruse, of course, formulation of the seven ray energies, energies in terms of the will. My autocorrect has stopped working, and I can't turn off the computer, so I'll have to type out tediously such things as the one about whom naught may be said, and the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Okay. Ray one. The ray of will and power. The energy of will or power. This ray is outstandingly related to the will which conquers death, thus related to Capricorn. It is nevertheless the ray of the destroyer. So how, if it destroys, can it conquer death? Well, we know it destroys that which brings death to being consciousness. It destroys that which brings death to being consciousness. I always dislike typing out consciousness. There's so many ways you can go wrong typing out that word. It's so much easier when one can do CONS, but it's not working right now. In this connection, I would remind you that the human attitude that death is the destroyer presents a limitation and erroneous point of view. Says DK, it is just the reverse. The first ray destroys death, because in reality there is no such thing. This is an amazing statement, and again relates to formula number six. There is no such thing as death, he is saying, and the first ray destroys, I suppose, the illusion of death. The concept is all part of the great illusion. It is a limitation of the human consciousness and is basically connected with the brain and not with the heart, as love, in a way, overcomes death. Love conquers all. Love puts us on both sides of the barrier at the same time. And the brain is that which gives us a fragmented picture of life and divides things one from another. So when we can, I'll go over here. When we can overcome the sense of division, we are a long way on the path to overcoming death. So it, the concept of death is all part of the great illusion, more related to the brain, which cannot pervade. The heart can pervade, and I think we should give that idea. The heart can pervade the isolation which death seems to impose, the vanishing which death seems to impose. There is this place, there is here, and then there is there. And death is always considered to be a kind of there, but here and there are really equivalent ideas. So it is, in a very true sense, a figment of the imagination. Ponder on this. So when we use our imagination to conceive of the different places there are in cosmos and the different planes, it is a limitation. When we have accurate perception of the things which are, of the states which are apparently separated from each other and which the imagination imagines as separate, then we will be on both sides of the veil at the same time, and in a sense the veil will cease to exist. The brain and I think the imagination reinforce the idea of the reality of the veil. The customary imagination reinforces, thought of the reality of the veil between the world of the so-called living and the world of the dead. So we have to train our imagination to be the intuition and not allow the imagination to be subject to that which the brain reveals to it. Train the imagination to be an instrument of the intuition. Imagination, yes. The abolition of death and of the destruction of form. The abolition of death and of the destruction of form is a manifestation of Ray One. So we will, what will we do? We will break the boundaries which imagination imagines as real. Love knows these boundaries are not real. The law of attraction, the law of magnetism, can overcome these artificial boundaries of perception. There are artificial boundaries of perception which can be negated through intuition and love. Artificial. Okay. For it brings about in reality the death of negation. That's why Master Moria uses the term Master M. It's a little harder for me to type here without the autocorrect, but Master M tells us that the great mantra is yes, 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 and equivalent in a way to the meaning of the Om. This is a first ray mantra, which is inclines to bring about the death of negation. Death, as usually understood, says we cannot be in contact. Death tells us we cannot be in contact with those who have disappeared. But magic will make possible the contact, as love does, and as any method for penetrating the very penetrable veils, which usually we cannot penetrate, and the inauguration of true activity. So, for it brings about the reality, in reality, the death of negation. Death, as usually understood, seems a great negation of presence. Okay, think of death as usually understood as a great negation of presence. But the presence is everywhere present. And we will negate the thought, thought that it is not. So we are everywhere simultaneously. Let's put it like this. Omnipresence goes a long way to negate the seeming reality of death, because when people die, they go somewhere else, so it seems, and we lose all contact. And what if we are there already, and what if they are here, and what if there is no elsewhere? Death is the great elsewhere, isn't it? Let's call it else. And what if, through the realization of the presence, there is no elsewhere? Then what happens to death? What happens to death if we can at any time dial up the dead, contact the dead, see the dead, see the dead in their present vehicle, just the way perhaps they can see us, THROUGH. Then the illusion of the elsewhere-ness of death disappears. The illusion of the elsewhere-ness, I know a terrible word, of death disappears. And what do we have here? The inauguration of true activity. It is the energy which can be called divine incentive. We dealt with this before, and we talked about divine incentive being impulsed from the astral plane in terms of the will to fulfillment. See, death is a great partialization. It fragments our perception. So we can put it like this, that death is based upon the fragmentation of perception. When that fragmentation is overcome and one can see life whole in all of its subtlety as well as the more gross impressions, then where is death? When everything is here, then where is death? It is not. So the inauguration, it is the energy which can be called divine incentive, and I believe we're talking about here about Ray 1 energy, right? Ray 1 energy. It is the life in the seed which destroys successively all forms in order that realized fruition may eventuate. So this is Ray 1 leading to Ray 2 fulfillment. That is the clue to Ray 1, it is the will which initiates, and it always is creating the new, so is very connected with Aries and with Uranus and with Pluto in a way, and with Vulcan creating the new as well. It brings about that which hitherto had not been. So it initiates that which hitherto had not been or had not been perceived. So DK is giving us a different view of these rays, not so much in their consciousness aspect, but in their relation to the will, what they actually accomplish in time and in space. So, the energy of will and power outstandingly related to the will which conquers death. When we look at the second ray today, as regards humanity, its highest realization is initiation. Well, after all, if this ray one, if ray one from the perspective of will is the will to initiate, then initiation is the highest realization, because through initiation we have self-initiated a new dimension to enter. Through initiation we have self-initiated the process of entering into a new dimension. Initiation. I am certainly appreciating my autocorrect, but when other things are happening, and namely there's a transfer going on and a conversion going on which takes some hours, then the computer cannot be turned off. Okay. Ray 2, the energy of love, wisdom. From the, again, always from the perspective of will. This basic energy is the will to unify, to synthesize. That's why I say that synthesis is the second aspect of the will. I relate the will to good and the will to synthesis as both expressions of the second aspect of the will. To produce coherence and mutual attraction and to establish relationships. But remember this, relationships which are entirely apart from the consciousness of relation or the realization of unity. I guess what we could call them is simply factual relationships. So the will to bring together, to unify, to make all things one, to produce that magnetic attraction which holds things together and prevents such fragmentation, we have mutual attraction and the ending in harmony of the factor of rebuff. And to establish relationships, but remember, relationships which are entirely apart from the consciousness of relation or the realization of unity. Simply factual. It is the fact of unification as seen from the beginning in the divine standing wave of purpose, and as existing forever, ever and forever in the mind of God, whose will embraces past, present, and future, and whose mind does not think in terms of evolution or a process. Well, in terms of being, pure being, there is no evolution or process. Or I really want to say progress as well. This is a very relative idea. When there is limitation and fragmentation, then we think in terms of evolution and progress or process. But in the world of being, there is but one reality which is changeless. That, of course, is the great intuition which we must come upon gradually and make an ongoing perception, a continuous perception, a continuity of realized synthesis. This is what we have to achieve. So there is unification from the beginning, because the purpose holds all things in unification, and only in the fragmentation of the lower worlds do we have a kind of incoherent separativeness. The mind of God holds ever this factual unity. Let's say that. The mind of God, okay, I'm still hoping for the autocorrect, holds ever the realization of factual unity synthesis. So this mind embraces the past, present, and future. Of course, what is God here? Is it some limited being, or are we talking about the God of the entire universe, or of all universes, whose will embraces past, present, and future, and whose mind does not think in terms of evolution or of process? It thinks in terms of the of bringing that which is below into conformity with that which is above. It thinks of bringing that which is below into conformity with that which is above. Above in the world of being is the Alpha, Omega archetype. And all that is apparently out of alignment with the archetype must be brought into alignment with the archetype. Is this really evolution? Or is it simply a grand experiment in the play, the dance, the song, the music, of the creator, resolving all apparent dissonance into harmony with the archetype and into, finally, identity with the archetype. The process is inherent in the seed. The evolutionary urge is the inevitable accompaniment of life in manifestation. The evolutionary urge, yes. Well, what is evolution, really? It's the unfoldment of form, or see, it's the, well, unfoldment, okay, unfoldment or arrangement of form until it becomes archetypal. Again, the seed is mentioned. Interesting about the seed. It is the life in the seed, the life in the seed, which destroys successively all forms in order that realized fruition may eventuate. And by fruition, we probably mean the ever more perfect expression of the fullness of life through adequate forms. Of course, no form will ever be adequate, so there has to be a return to the realization of life is the only substance. So this is the will to unification. We use these in our full moon all the time, full moon work. These types of will can come from the different souls and their rays, but they, in a way, have a much higher origin than the soul. Today, as regards humanity, its highest expression is the mystical vision, which I suppose is the vision of the factual unity which purpose embraces. All right, then we go on to Ray 3. It is the energy of active intelligence, also called abstract intelligence, also called creative intelligence. This is the will of conditioned purpose. Well, it's purpose subject to conditions, I suppose. Purpose, which is Uranian, is subject to conditions which are correlated with Saturn. The will of conditioned purpose, maybe we'll see more what he means here. Active intelligence is ever actively arranging the contents of universal consciousness until they come into right relationship, gelling with resonant to and gelling with and conforming to the ever-held archetype in the world of being, held by the mind or ideation of God. These factors, which are working out through the medium, its medium. These factors, which are working out through its medium, are the forceful carrying forward of the recognized plan, because forceful because it's still connected with the first ray, the forceful carrying forward of the recognized plan with a goal intelligently conceived and an active incentive which carries the process intelligently forward on the strength of its own momentum. Well, a great abstract mind is at work here who has seen very much of the concrete examples of this working out and is then able to put the process into convincing abstract terms. The energy of active intelligence, this is the will of conditioned purpose, purpose subject to conditions. And let's just say that plan subjects purpose to conditions and to time and space. In a way, in the world of being, purpose exists from beginning to end and in a way outside the developmental realms of time and space. It is simply sustained. The factors which are working out through its medium are the forceful carrying forward, so it's on the hardline rays, of the recognized plan, the actions which must be taken to manifest purpose, the actions which must be taken to manifest purpose, with a goal intelligently conceived, so it's doable in terms of the law of economy. We can put that in. Doable in terms of the law of economy, and an active incentive which carries the process intelligently forward on the strength of its own momentum. Meaning, we have here what's called the using the line of least resistance, and intelligently avoiding friction, which increases momentum and the use of momentum in carrying the process forward. I don't think I've ever seen the Tibetan Rite quite so abstractly as in this latter part when dealing with the great abstracting power of the will. Again, I would remind you that I am not dealing with, we do need to be reminded, don't we, that I am not dealing with human consciousness, but with the sum total of that undertaking which makes matter subservient to and adaptable to the basic idea of the mind in the mind of God. I'm dealing with the sum total of that undertaking which makes matter subservient to and adaptable to the basic idea in the mind of God. So we are manipulating matter for the sake of its conformity to the sustained archetype, which is purpose. And no human being is as yet able to conceive of that idea. There's a great work going on. The idea of the army of the Lord is at work. The worker and the work are one. Let's look at that because it kind of, worker and the work. What's going on here? Let's just say, I am the worker and the work. I am the worker and the work. All right. Here it is. Here it is. Let the army of the Lord, responsive to the word, cease their activities. Let knowledge end in wisdom. Let the point vibrating become the point quiescent, and in all lines, and all lines gather into one. Let the soul realize the one in many, and let the word go forth in perfect understanding. I am the worker and the work, the one that is. We can correlate this important little stanza on the third ray with the description of the third ray from the will aspect, the worker and the work. Let's see, so we are here in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, page 418, EP 1418. And we will let this go into green, and we will make of it a little addendum which will be useful in thinking about it. So, and no human being is yet capable of conceiving the idea of the great work. I think this is what we could call it, right, the idea or concept of the great work. No one knows what is the will of God or what is the nature of his intelligent purpose. Depends on what we mean by God, but even when it comes to the planetary logos, there are very few who really know. It is the will to evolution, to unfold the expression of spirit within the form by adapting the form, matter and form, to the needs of the spirit. So it, and when the archetype is reflected in the lower worlds, that adaptation is correct, and evolution has occurred, and the arrangements below are identical with, in their own medium, the pattern above, the archetypal pattern above. Today, as regards humanity, its highest expression is education or the progressive development through experience. Interesting that we can relate education to the second, third, and fifth rays, particularly. The modern educational institutions come under the fifth. Here we have the will to evolve of the third ray, which is the will to evolution, and its highest expression is education, and then, of course, the illuminating second ray is always associated with learning and with bringing wisdom to the unillumined. Ray 4, the energy of harmony through conflict, and this is, it's always going to be mysterious, fundamentally the will to destroy limitation. I guess beauty forever destroys limitation, and there's a certain type of freedom which exists in perfect harmony. Freedom and liberation exist in the state of perfect harmony. This is not the same thing as the will to destroy negation, as in the case of Ray 1. It's so interesting, this idea of the will to destroy that which negates the true expression of life, the true understanding of life, due to our limitations, due to human limitations, the human brain conceives of many figments of imagination which are which serve as limitations upon a possible perception. So this is the will to destroy limitation. I think it's much related to the Buddhic plane. Again, we have the idea of Neptune, I think, connected with the Buddhic plane. There is the sense in which we can break down boundaries, okay? And Neptune and Buddhi do this. We break down or dissolve boundaries which give us the illusion of limitation. So this is not the same thing as the will to destroy that which negates the livingness of life. Let's see. There is that. Is that which negates the living, the realization of the livingness of life. And it negates life expressing itself livingly, if I can put it like that. This is the will to destroy negation. In other words, it destroys that which negates the livingness of life. So the first ray destroys that which negates the livingness of life. But we have something else here. This has to do with boundaries, we might say. Are there real boundaries? Are there real boundaries which limit or through intuition and through the sense of wholeness or through intuition and the sense of wholeness are those boundaries seen as illusory. All right. So this is not the same thing as the will to destroy negation as in the case of ray one, but is an allied aspect of that. Yes, it would be hard to divorce it entirely. I'm not referring to the consciousness aspect which recognizes and profits by such struggle. I am referring to the energy. See, the occultist on ray one works with energy, and the mystic or psychic on ray two works with consciousness. This is found in the destiny of the nations. I think we can look here, the destiny of the nations, and, well, that's not good. Okay, let's see, true psychic. Okay. And here it is. This is the chart I'm looking for. We're dealing with force, energy, action, the occultist, rather than consciousness expansion, initiation, and the true psychic. I think I'd like to copy this from 145 of the Destiny of the Nations. So we're not dealing with the consciousness aspect which recognizes and profits from struggle. Rather, we're dealing with energy, aren't we? So what I'm going to do is make, this is DON 145, and I'm going to make this smaller under font number 10. And I'll make it, as usual, bit green, okay? And then we ought to be able to, okay, all right. Here we are, and this is the contrast. All right, and there we are. The magician is called coming in on ray 3, not ray 7. The ritualist on ray 7. This is a very useful table. Scientist here on ray 5, and devotion, abstraction, idealism, and the devotee. And finally, magic, ritual, and the ritualist. Okay, now we're good. But look at the first two. We're talking about force, right? We're talking about energy, force, energy, action, the occultist. We're not talking about perception, consciousness, expansion, initiation, and the true psychic. It's something different, isn't it? Now, what I'm going to do is get rid of this and start it again, because I pressed the wrong button. And when you press the wrong button, you're in trouble. Now we're back. Okay. So I'm not referring to the consciousness aspect which recognizes and profits from such a struggle. Rather, we are talking about these two things, and we are contrasting them. We're dealing with energy itself, with action. And with applied energy rather than reception. Okay. So I am here referring to energy. That's what gave me the idea, after all, to go to that particular table. I'm referring to energy inherent in all forms and peculiarly strong in humanity because man is self-conscious. Remember, this is the fourth kingdom, which produces inevitably and unavoidably the struggle between life and that which it has chosen as its limitation. So here comes the fourth ray in this struggle. The fourth ray is present in this struggle. And this eventually shatters or breaks up the limitation. We might say this eventually shatters or breaks up through wear and tear and friction that limitation, the moment that a point of real harmony at one moment has been reached. Let me put it this way. Dissonance is binding. Harmony is liberating. And I always use the idea of the out-of-tune chord, which does not fly. It, in fact, seems unusually cramped, confined, and when harmony is achieved, the flight occurs. There's some kind of sonic liberation. There is a sonic liberation in harmony. Matter of fact, if you look at the fourth ray method of healing, he educates the he also trains the listening ear of him who must go forth, not only him who must be healed. He knows the manner of the sound which brings the healing touch and also that which says depart. So when there is the right kind of harmony, the spirit can depart, the soul can depart. It's oftentimes we are held in the body through dissonance. We have to be careful about how much we are subjected to harmony, as we might fly free. Esoterically, it might be said that the moment that form, i.e. limitation, and life balance each other, a rift immediately appears, and through it flows a fresh outpouring of the will. Is this a downpouring of the will? Down? Interesting, because we're always going to be looking for new harmonies. So if there is a true balance, the harmony cannot be sustained because a greater, the contents of consciousness in a greater ring pass knot are then allowed in and a new harmony has to be achieved. But, you know, how this works, a rift immediately appears. It's like this. The will moves us onward and cannot stand stasis. So in this respect, harmony is stasis. It is a beauty to be appreciated momentarily. And then there must be progress onward. Christ had to die because he had achieved harmony with the will of God. And then the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom. Well, you kind of wonder, which temple? Was this the temple of Ezekiel, and was it Christ, or was it Jesus? It is Christ who achieved harmony with the will of God, but in what manner did Christ die? He certainly didn't die in any bodily form. He was absorbed into the will of God. Is that a kind of death? Christ had to die because he had achieved harmony and with the will of God, and then the veil of the temple was rent in twain. Well, the temple is usually considered the temple of Solomon, but what happens on the higher monadic plane when one begins to take the seventh initiation? Is the veil of the temple of Ezekiel rent in twain? There's always going to be ambiguity here when we're talking about Christ and Jesus, or maybe Jesus the Christ. The significance of this fresh inflow of the will now appear. The stage is set anew for a fresh and renewed activity of the living principle. So once a form is harmonized from the perspective of spirit, which wishes to move on, it is useless. at least for the progressive spirit. I suppose sometimes harmonious forms can be sustained, just like a body, let us say, can be sustained as an instrument. If Master R chooses to live for 500 years in the same body, he can do that because he knows the principle of harmony. Sometimes when I've looked at his physiognomy as the Count of Saint-Germain, I'm wondering to what extent the balancing force of Libra was there. Certainly Saturn was profoundly present. Maybe Gemini, Saturn, Libra, and maybe Capricorn, I have thought. The significance of this fresh inflow of will will now appear. The stage is set anew for a fresh and renewed activity of the living principle. As far as humanity is concerned, the seeds of death emerge through the medium of this ray. This is so interesting. You know, normally we're considering death coming from the first ray or maybe through some second ray power of attraction to the other side or maybe from some sixth ray immolation. Really, there are so many methods of achieving the death of the causal body. And the Grim Reaper death is but an aspect of this form of will. Grim Reaper is actually Saturnian, but it does create a cleavage. And so it creates through its scythe, is that it? Its scythe, a cleavage, through which escape can be made or will can enter. Maybe they are essentially the same thing, a rift. The Grim Reaper produces a rift. This is a very unusual association, I think. And the Grim Reaper death is but an aspect of this will conditioned by the fourth ray and emerging from the fourth plane. Interestingly, from the plane of harmony. I think it all has to do with the progressive nature of the spirit, all harmonies being temporary and all forms serving a purpose once harmonization has been achieved. Death is an act of the intuition. The word of death is sent forth, and the mind then organizes itself and then repeats that word. And then the waiting form responds and drops away, and the soul stands free. So death is an act of the intuition transmitted by the soul to the personality and then acted upon in conformity to the divine will. In conformity to divine will, by the individual will, this is the will to harmonization. It is, it severs the spirit from its form after harmony is achieved. I suppose harmony would become very dull. We have to pursue new dissonances and bring them into harmony. This is the way of the ongoing development of the human spirit. We have to pursue new dissonances in order to bring them into harmony. What would it be if we remained in a fatuous harmony all the time and simply accepted our limitations? What would happen with the spirit, to the spirit which is filled with divine discontent? It would be kind of a imprisonment, would it not? We can see how much this particular approach, based on energy, let's see, the destiny of the nations, I'll go there again. The, I'm probably looking right at it. There it is. Okay. It's page 145, and that's just page, okay. Uh-oh. I think I've, I have hit the wrong button. Well, let's see if I can get out of this for a moment. So here again is that table. If we just look at it closely, we see that the motions involved are very different. Force, energy, action, it's the driving power behind the power to arrange. It's that which keeps everything in being. It's the sustaining action and the action which impels. It's very different from the receptivity of the second ray, I think. All right, so the will to harmonization. And today its highest expression as regards humanity is the intuition. It's very good that he puts this highest expression here. We might not suspect these things. Education for the third ray, the mystic vision for the second ray, and what was it for the first ray? I think should remember that. Initiation, usually associated with the second ray. Interestingly enough, the method of teaching, the highest method of teaching for the second ray, is the science of initiation, but since it's the will to initiate, we have to go always into new dimensions, and it takes the first ray to overcome any obstacle of that sort. But here we have death through harmonization. That's really what is happening with the fourth ray. I still have to work on that Grim Reaper, except there is a cleavage or a rift produced, and out of that rift the life can escape, and into it may come a great will which energizes the life so much that it escapes. So it is, let's call this death through harmonization. Highest expression, intuition, as it works out through group activity. Death always releases the individual into the group. If you think about the confinement, the confinement imposed by the ahamkarik principle, the sense of isolation, the sense of isolation. And when we die, we come into much fuller contact. Death brings more unobstructed contact and greater perception through what were previously barriers to vision, vision and understanding. Well, but still, he is saying things that are not common at all, not expected whatsoever, so you can see how much this has to be studied with care. All right, we are at the point where we can say that this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 143A, and we are on page 599. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 143B, page 599.